This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
All right, this hour of Brock and Salk is brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. We'll talk to Tim Hasselbeck coming up here in just a moment or two, one of our longtime favorites on this show. Tim's always opinionated. He's got something to say for
Listen.
He does say look and listen quite a bit.
Look.
He makes it very clear.
Thing. You know, I've been thinking about something, by the way. I've not ever shared this with you guys.
Oh.
But, you know, we do the little draft previews. Once we get to, like, to the month of April, we do, like, a segment. I think it's 8:30 usually where we can do a little capsule and previewing a guy that may be a Seahawk. I'd like to do maybe something a little different, too. I'd like to add the possibility of just my favorite guys on the road this year.
Mm.
Just my favorite college football players. I don't know if there's going to be five. I don't know if there'll be seven or ten. And maybe those same guys will fit in the month of April as we steer towards the draft. But, you know, watching these Senior Bowls and watching the, you know, just stuff that now kind of cranks up and gets going in this organization that got it so right last year in the draft. I was just kind of thinking about that as I started to look at these names of just some of the different experience I have with them. Maybe they'll be mid-round guys like a Shaquem Griffin last year, right? He's not going to be a top three-round pick, but just some guys that I, you know, have a real affinity for in college football. I'd like to try to do
Give
that.
Give me one. Give me one off the top of your head. Who's somebody that you got an affinity for?
The kids down at Clemson, both of them, Cleveland Farrell and Christian Wilkins, are two D linemen, are two of my favorites I've seen in college football the last in my 11 years. I mean, they just loved ball. 42 was Christian Wilkins. He was a kid that was crying after the game. 99, Cleveland Farrell is like, he's like Clemens. Chris Clemens just got this anger, but this also soft side. Both of them are just tremendous human beings and players, too.
Sounds good. All right, well, we'll do that here over these next couple of weeks leading up to, well, I guess we have some time before the draft at the end of April.
We'll get the combine. We'll get some time. All sorts of stuff.
Good to hear. I'm going to make a scary confession. I'm not willing to say yet what I'm going to talk about at 8:30. Right now, we'll talk to Tim Hasselbeck, though, ESPN NFL analyst, former quarterback, and he joins us here on the Venue Kings Hotline. Hi, Tim. How are you?
I'm great. Good to be on with you guys again. It's been a while.
It has been, what has it been, 3 years?
It's not been that long.
Yeah, I think so. You know what? I think Salk was, his feelings were hurt last time I was on. And you know, kind of, I've heard he was really resistant of having me back on as a guest.
That's right. You know? I've been working against you behind the scenes, trying to make sure we don't have Tim on.
I've heard. It's like, hey, Brock wants to have you on, but Salk's not ready for it yet. Emotionally, he's not ready to have you back on.
Yeah,
the air.
We had so Matt on.
I'm glad we're back together.
Yeah,
I'm glad we're back together.
You bring too much heat. I can't always handle everything Tim's got.
Hey, kind of along those lines, before we get to QBs and defenses and Russ and all this stuff, hey, just from like a personal side, what's it like to work so much with Scott Van Pelt? He did an amazing post last night again, talking about his dad, his obviously the connection he made with Tyler Trent. You get a chance, what, every Sunday night, Monday night, to sit down with him?
Every Monday night, yeah. Yeah, so actually watched the Monday night game with him and Stanford Steve and the guys that produced that show, and then I'm obviously on right after the game, and you know, we do a segment on the game. He's obviously a really talented guy, and I think probably the biggest thing, and you know, you kind of mentioned you know, just like the thing you did last night. And you know, he's a pretty emotional guy. I think he really cares, you know, he really cares. And I think that authenticity is what people probably like the most, would probably be the best way that I could kind of describe it, you know, with just, he's passionate about it, really cares about it. And I think it shows in his work.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, all you say that and what rings in my ears are Pete Carroll. You know, being around him as much as we have here, Tim, for the last decade or so, and in a year that was supposed to be a retool and a rebuild and everything else, his energy, how much he cares about these guys. Did you see this season at all coming from Seattle this last year?
No, not one bit. And I remember she was probably on the set of NFL Live. You know, on Mondays, we do our whole Overreaction Monday. It's a segment that's lived since Eric Mangini was, working on NFL Live at ESPN and was, you know, used to get so annoyed about how everyone would overreact on Mondays, whether it was, you know, getting ready to fire coaches or, you know, say that this guy's going to the Hall of Fame. So this segment of Overreaction Mondays lived for years. And this year, the question was, hey, Overreaction, you know, Monday, is this the best coaching job of Pete Carroll's career? And then you just kind of have to look at it and be like, well, wait a second. Like, think about the players that were lost, some of the just even distraction, you know, disgruntled player type stuff they dealt with, injuries. And, you know, I think it's very easy to make the case that the job he did this year was as good a job as he's maybe ever done coaching a football team, considering what the expectations were.
Yeah, I'm pretty close to agreeing with that. I think 2014, the year they went back to the Super Bowl, maybe would take the cake for me, just how difficult it is to keep guys in line after winning, especially this group, after winning the way they did in 2013. I would probably put that number one, but this one sure isn't far behind it, Tim. I agree with everything you said. I think, and it's a shame that he gets almost no buzz whatsoever as a potential coach of the year, nor did he that year. I think he lost to Bruce Arians that year.
Really? Yeah, and I guess, I mean, look, there are obviously some good candidates this year when you think about, you know, I mean, like the Frank Reich situation, and I think that, like anything, it's a little bit like what's going on right now with the Patriots. It just ends up being fatigue. You know, it's like in the Seahawks and Pete Carroll, I think, have been nationally looked at you know, as somebody, you know, as a team that's enjoyed a fair amount of success over the last few years. And so because of that, I think it's exciting for people when it's just new people. You know, it's not Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll. It's not Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. And so, and I think that's why, like, people, you know, were excited about Anthony Lynn, you know, paired with Phillip Rivers, or excited about the fact that Patrick Mahomes is now the quarterback and it's not Alex Smith. So I just think, you know, on a national level, people like to kind of have fresh faces be a part of, you know, all the buzz and excitement.
Tim Hasselbeck of ESPN with us. You want a little deeper question here for you at 10 o'clock where you're at this morning? You able to handle a little deeper question?
I can. Listen, Trent Dilfer spent the night at my house last night. So
whoa,
and
wait
I was
a minute.
Up really late.
Hold on.
And, but as Brock, as you know, like he likes going deep. So I'm already opened all the way.
Before we get to deep, let's can we dig into this for a moment? You guys had a sleepover?
Well, so he has a daughter that's going to go to Lipscomb University next year. And another daughter that is a recent volleyball transfer to Louisville, which is 2.5 hours away. So he and his wife were kind of coming through the area.
He can't afford a hotel. So, yeah. He's got to crash with you.
Easy. He's got friends.
Trent's done great in his career. He doesn't want a hotel room? He wants to stay with you and your family?
I mean, we worked together for like 9 years at ESPN. We're friends. Now, listen.
Brock and I work together. We don't stay at each other's homes.
Because you see, like when I was working at ESPN, like Trent and his family, like when I lived in New York City, Trent and his family, you know, because he was working, like he did Christmas with us 1 year. Like we're friends. I mean, so listen.
Tim, he doesn't understand that concept. Don't worry, Tim. Don't talk anymore.
it's like being a teammate of somebody.
That's right.
If any of the Shewards were coming through Nashville,
yep.
Like it's an open door policy.
Wow.
Like I listen, that includes Sam. That includes Sam Heward, okay?
That's right.
Any Heward that wants to come through here, we're good.
And any Hasselbeck wants to come through Puyallup or Redmond?
The Salks sounds like aren't invited if they're coming through.
Well, listen, I think that if I were in Seattle, Brock would treat me as nice as he would treat Dane Looker, okay? Mm-hmm. I think that that's what would happen.
That's
okay?
Fair.
You know Brock and Dane haven't spoken in 20 years,
stop
right?
It, no, stop it.
There's no way that's true.
Thank you.
That's true. You've got...
Thank you. Okay.
Now, talk, if you were
all
in
right,
Nashville
here we go. Yes.
And I saw you, like, I have a feeling like you would, like, act like you didn't see me.
Oh, right. Yes, you know I'd walk by you.
You would send him to the snake pit house that Matt had there.
Oh, my gosh. No,
yes.
No, thank you.
Yes,
the
would.
Last time I was in Nashville, I stayed in a...
You're surprised by that. I guess you're surprised that he would spend the night. Like, why do you want to stay in some hotel when you can enjoy the company,
honestly,
you know, of some friends? Stay up late, talk, and go deep.
Tim, I had forgotten you were in Nashville. The last time I stayed at a hotel in Nashville, it had graffiti on the inside of the door. Whoa. So if that's the caliber of the hotels in Nashville, I fully understand why he's staying
Tim,
at your house.
He's just jelly. Sense. Enough of this.
Right.
He's just jelly.
All right,
go
deep. Ask Tim your deep question.
You've sat on that set every week on Monday nights. You're working your butt off back there. You're watching all of this football all season long. We're on the precipice now of these championship games, Tim. So tell me the single biggest thing you learned about the NFL this year.
about the NFL?
The biggest takeaway, now that we're all right here, man, we're right on the verge of getting to the biggest takeaway you had of this NFL as a package this year.
You know what? I think the big thing I feel like I noticed this year, and I think I've always believed it to be true, but, you know, when you see some people, you see coaches move, and then you see players have varying degrees of success. I think the big thing I would say is that coaching and relationships matter. And, you know, as much as you can talk like just X's and O's and things of that nature, you're still dealing with people. It is a people business, and it is a relationship business, and you need people that feel empowered and confident to, you know, to kind of do things that are difficult. And I think that when you have people that really trust one another and have like, and, you know, I think Nick Foles' description of kind of what he experienced in Philadelphia is a good example of that. And I think that, you know, along with that is guys that are just guys that I think are good coaches. I mean, listen, Bill Belichick is obviously a very good coach. I think Andy Reid is an amazing coach, and I think that that's why you can see somebody like Patrick Mahomes, who's never started a full season in his life, throw 50 touchdowns and playing with so much confidence. Is he talented? Sure, yeah, he's talented, but like, there's a lot of really talented people in the NFL that never have done and never will do like what that team's accomplished this year. So I think that's the big thing for me. It's just kind of like a reinforcement of that. I think I knew it, but like seeing it, I think is pretty cool and affirming.
Did you play for Andy Reid your first year?
Yeah, my first couple of years I was in Philadelphia, and people ask me all the time, like, if you were to get into coaching, because look, I played for Joe Gibbs, Steve Spurrier, I was at the Ravens for a little bit, and Brian Billick and Tom Coughlin at the Giants. I feel like I was fortunate to be around, you know, a lot of coaches that had a lot of success in the NFL. I mean, John Fox, I was there for, you know, a quick minute, and he took a team to a Super Bowl or two teams to a Super Bowl. If you were to say, if you could coach like any coach, if you got into coaching, who would you want to do it most like? It would be an easy answer of Andy Reid for me.
See him necessarily being able to adapt and evolve the way he has over the last year or so with Patrick Mahomes?
Yeah, I think that he is super creative. Here's what I think the best thing about him is, and he described this one time when Donovan McNabb was hurt and Coy Detmer was the backup. And, like, you couldn't find two different players. You know, Donovan is a physical freak. He's 6'3", 6'4", 260 pounds, one of the strongest guys on the team, an amazing athlete. He's playing quarterback. Coy Detmer was probably about 195 pounds, maybe 6 foot. And, you know, not a real strong arm and all that stuff. Well, Donovan gets hurt and Coy's going to play. And Andy brought Coy in and he's like, look, you're not here just to be friends with Donovan. Like, you're here because I think you can play. And if Donovan gets hurt, I think you can win games for us. Like, that's why you're here. And we're going to run the same offense, but I need you to put your personality on this offense. Donovan has his own personality in this offense. Yeah. We're going to call similar plays, but it needs to be with your personality. And you think about what Andy Reid has done in terms of guys that have played well in the NFL for him. I think he's second to none with quarterbacks. If you really think about the fact that Donovan McNabb, Jeff Garcia, Michael Vick, Coy Detmer, A.J. Feely, Kevin Cobb, Alex Smith, Patrick Mahomes, like, no one has ever had that many quarterbacks play well for him. No one. And I just think that he's that good of a coach that he understands. Like, look, I'm going to do what I do on offense, but all these quarterbacks aren't the same. So even though I'm running the same offense, I need to let their personality show through in that offense. And he's done an amazing job of it.
I think Tim Hasselbeck here with us just for the last couple minutes. I think, Tim, what I've heard here in Seattle, certainly what's been ringing really loud after the loss to the Dallas Cowboys in the playoffs in particular, is that, you know, this league, that question I asked you earlier about the overriding kind of takeaway of the league, that this league is now flipped. That the top four or the five scoring offenses are the teams that are left. that it is about the quarterback play and the numbers and everything is favoring offense. Are we now at a time, are you ready to overreact on a Thursday, overreaction Monday? Are you ready to overreact and say, yeah, now it is more important to build your team offensively than that age-old adage that defense wins championships?
I think because of the rules, I think you need to be really good offensively. I don't think there's any question about that. Like, I think this idea of, well, I'll give you an example. I was never a believer in the Ravens. I just was not a believer that you could win a game in the playoffs, in a few games in the playoffs against really good teams when your quarterback needs to run it 20-something times and is – and when you call a pass play, you really have no idea where the ball is going. Like, I don't think you can do that. You might be able to win one playoff game, but I don't think you're winning, three games to get to the Super Bowl that way. Maybe even two games to get to the Super Bowl that way. I really don't. So I do think that you need a quarterback that's an awesome player. And if you have a quarterback that's an awesome player, then you have a chance to have a really good offense. But I don't know that we're going to see all these teams. Like, listen, the Chiefs don't have a very good defense. They've got a great offense. And I think that, with the Rams, their defense is probably a little bit better. I actually believe that the Saints are flat out an all-around very good team. So you're always going to have good offense, but I think like a team like the Saints is a much better defense than people realize, and I think they're the best team still alive.
I would tend to agree with you, and that word is balance, right? Now, I thought the Chargers were going to be in that mix also, and maybe they just got tripped up by, three East Coast trips or three long road trips in a row playing a Patriots team that was just ready for them. But, yeah, balance seems to be that lost word in the NFL these days.
Well, I was at the Saints training camp this year and, just kind of off on the side where I wasn't doing segments and stuff. Just talked to a few coaches that were there. And a lot of these guys had, been coaching a long time and been around good teams and had a lot of success. I mean, if you look at their roster of coaches, they've got really good coaches on that team. And we just kind of were talking about them and, the kind of overriding theme I was getting was like, everybody talks about, our offense and rightfully so because of Drew and Alvin Kamara is amazing and Michael Thomas is amazing and all that stuff's great. They were like, we have a really good defense. We think our group of linebackers is as versatile and as good as anybody's in the league. They're big. They're strong, they're fast, they're good in pass protection, they're excellent against the run, and then they have playmakers like Cam Jordan on defense, and, they feel like they are really good. They have, at least one difference maker in the back end, and so I think the thing that was kind of like, overshadowed the people weren't talking about is they loved their defense coming into the year, and I don't know if they ended up as the leading team against the run in the NFL, but for a long time, they were the best team in the league defending the run. So, and then factor it. I mean, you guys know about home field advantage out there. Now you got to go in that dome and play with all of that crowd noise. I think they're a really good team. And maybe phrase it. I think they're a great team. I really think they are.
So I'm sending Salk out to Nashville. He's going to have a little trip. We're going to road trip.
Yeah.
Just him, though. I'm going to send him away.
What? There's a Red Roof Inn on Highway 100.
I think that's the one I stayed at with the graffiti on the inside. I was trying to cover the winter meetings, and it didn't go well, man. That place was sketchy.
Sucks. Listen, stop being so cheap, okay? There's a Marriott downtown.
That's right.
Okay? Like, that's your problem, right? Like, use some points. Okay, stay at a nice hotel.
All right, I'll do the best. Thank you. And you could tell Trent the same thing. Trent can feel free to spring for a hotel as well. Tim, thank you, man. It's always good to catch up with you and argue with you and fight with you and everything else. Take care, man. We'll talk to you soon. See you, buddy.
See you, guys.
There you go. There's Tim Hasselbeck. And, man, the text toy, not pleased with my comments for Tim. All right. Well, I'll tell you guys, grow up. How about that? Tim and I have known each other a long time and doing radio hits with each other since long before I even came to Seattle.
True. That's right. Hashtag truth.
Try to calm down out
it's
there.
It's a pretty good point he made as far as his biggest overall takeaway. And the more that I looked at it and I started to write these names down, that coaching matters, right? The last few years, coaching matters I think Trent actually a couple years talked about that with us, that if you're going to shorten the whole offseason,
yep,
and you're not going to have the time that you've had in the past, then you better maximize it, have great teachers and great coaches.
Are the four coaches left, four of the best coaches in the game?
Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, Andy Reid and Mahomes, McVay right now and Goff, and Sean Payton and Drew Brees. Those guys all have relationships.
If you were looking to define the best coaches in the NFL, you wouldn't get too much beyond six before all four of those names hit, right?
Correct. I mean, not only are the top four scoring offense,
John Harbaugh, maybe.
Yep.
I mean, but other than those two, who else's name would you have to get through in order to before you were done with all these names?
Mike Tomlin is a name.
Maybe.
Because of some resume.
Sure.
He's had to deal with chaos there in Pittsburgh.
Okay. So now you're at maybe seven.
That's probably it.
Right?
I mean, a quarter of the league turned over at that position. Eight of the 32 jobs, so eliminate those. I mean, that pie that just gets, that filter gets smaller and smaller and smaller.
If you're hiring a head coach to kind of run your team, I can't imagine that those four wouldn't be in the top seven.
Yes. And you know what? And beyond that, I've said before, how do I evaluate quarterbacks? I think I've grown in this opinion or you know, it's crystallized over 10 years. Give me the quarterback that elevates the huddle on the team. Give me that guy the minute he walks on the field, Gardner Minshew, just guys believe in him. Give me that guy that the minute he walks into a huddle, Russell Wilson, they're going to find a way to win. And I think you look at all those coaches, Mike, isn't it fair to say in their own unique way that every one of those coaches elevates their quarterback? So if those are some of the most kind of tipping point positions right there, QB, you better elevate your teammates. Head coach, you better get the absolute most out of your quarterback in different ways. Bill does it differently with Tom. Andy does it in that kind of fatherly way.
Yeah.
And I love that image that he, every time they show him sitting on the bench next to home, we're in this thing together, mm-hmm, man. And that list that Tim listed there, the slappy quarterbacks that played their best ball under his umbrella.
Have you been reading any of these stories about Andy Reid, the childhood athlete? Have you heard of anything about that? Because he was a punt, pass, and kick champion, right? He won the punt, pass, and kick contest, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't have to read any of that. All I had to see was the image of him standing 3 feet taller, yeah, and 3 feet wider than any of his combatants.
So he won that, but there were some other stories. One of them is that he was a catcher on the Little League team, and basically people were like afraid to run into him. He's just like a mountain.
Massive.
He's a mountain of a human being.
You know, I sat down with him at the combine. I do remember, you know what, we're going to have to maybe do a little story time at some point here, just reflecting upon that. When I went to the combine, I sat with Sean Payton, I sat with Mike Holmgren and his staff, I also sat with Andy Reid.
Oh,
I had a workout, private workout for him.
Let's do that here maybe tomorrow, because I think Andy Reid is a really interesting figure, and he's sort of been forgotten about, because Belichick sort of he's Belichick, right? Sean Payton is that's really a Drew Brees story, but Sean Payton is a big personality.
McVay's the hottest thing going,
right? And then Andy Reid just sort of, he's been eclipsed by the quarterback, but he's awfully important and a huge mastermind of what's happened there. So I do think that's a good conversation. Maybe later today, maybe tomorrow. Before we do any of it, Brock, let me remind people, 710 ESPN Seattle, proud to sponsor the 84th annual MTR Western Sports Star of the Year Awards. The show happens Thursday, February 7th at the Sheraton Grand Seattle. Join the Seattle Sports Commission in celebrating the great moments in sports from 2018 and beyond. Find tickets, info, and a chance to vote on your favorite athletes or sports stories of the year at 710sports.com/events. All right, I don't want to do this, so can we not do the next segment? Can we just fast forward?
I offered you an olive
else?
Branch of a story, but now you need to confess.
You think I need to?
Well, the text toy is demanding it.
The text toy is mad at me. I don't know if this is going to make them more mad or not, but I want to be vulnerable with you guys and tell you where my mind went last night, even if it makes you guys upset. It's next on Brock and Salk.
This is Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Don't do it, Salk. In your personal life, you're allowed to be vulnerable, but Radio Salk has two emotions only, disappointment and anger. Don't be weak. All right. We'll see. This hour is brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. We've been having one of those weird days here.
Yeah, I like
today.
That character. What's the name of that show that has the five different cartoon characters in Inside Out?
Yes.
And it shows you blowing your top, that little red guy.
Oh, the
that,
movie?
Yeah, the movie. Oh, yeah. That's I'd see you sometimes.
Yeah?
You just get all steamed up over there. And then there's other times where you're just really frustrated with yourself, and I think that's one of those moments right now.
You think I'm frustrated with myself?
Kind of.
I'm more embarrassed. I don't know how to tell you guys this. I'm not sure that you guys, I hope you guys will keep listening after I say this. I'm getting kind of excited for baseball season. No.
Woo! Let's go.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to be, but I'm
like, actually, why?
I'm getting excited for the Mariners season. I know it sounds stupid. It's true, though. I was sitting at home last night. Heather went out. I put the kids to bed, and I'm sitting there. There's nothing on TV. I watched the end of a mediocre hockey game, and there's nothing going on. And so I just was sitting there like, you know what would make tonight better?
What's that?
A baseball game. A Mariner game. And then I started thinking about the Mariners lineup, and I started talking myself into it, man. This is an old habit left over from childhood. I have had this habit since I was a kid.
They're self-destructive habits.
I dare you to stop me, Kyle. I dare you.
Okay, if you truly dare me to stop you, I will stop you dead in your tracks.
Should we put some music behind you?
I dare you to stop me from getting excited about the Mariners in baseball season. All right, this will stop me, actually. Please, don't do this.
Why don't you talk about how all these things that you really, truly are excited about.
Stop it. No! No, this is not going to make... That just reminds me of the pain. I don't want that. I'm getting excited. Jay Bruce was a huge prospect, man. He had some really good years. He's got some pop. It's okay that he's never been in the American League before. He's played in the minors over in the NL and had a lousy year last year. Jay Bruce is a huge prospect. I used to really want Jay Bruce on my team.
32-year-old journeyman Jay Bruce
and now
was
he's
a prospect
here.
15 years ago.
Edwin Encarnacion helped me win a fantasy league in 2004. And now Edwin Encarnacion is here. Oh, and by the way, Edwin Encarnacion has hit 30 home runs every year since 2012, and he seems to play the game with great joy. Who doesn't want Encarnacion on their team? Malik Smith had an on-base percentage of 367 last year. 367. Where would that have put him on the Mariners? Off the top of your head, where would 367 have ranked on on-base percentage on the Mariners a year ago?
Right behind Edgar.
How about number one on the Mariners last year? It would have put him just 1 point ahead of Mitch Haniger. And, oh, yeah, Mitch Haniger's still here, too. How can you... No, stop it, Kyle. I don't appreciate this. I'm trying to get... Kyle.
Here we go. Something happening here, baby.
Kyle, don't be a jerk.
Jay Bruce was...
It's a big prospect, Brock.
Hat.
Turn that off.
Never.
Domingo Santana.
Turn that off. Domingo Santana. I'm kind of excited for him, too. That guy hits bombs.
Something Narvaez.
That guy hits bombs. You've got a catcher who can hit. Look, turn that off. The Mariners have a legitimate major league lineup. They do. The pitching staff, maybe not. The relievers are kind of a who knows. But their lineup is a major league lineup. It's probably not as good as the Red Sox or a couple of the premier teams in the game.
What? Probably. Did you say probably?
But it's not.
Okay.
But it's not. Probably.
Stop saying
it's,
dumb things
okay,
like that.
It's just not. Okay. But it's not like a bad lineup.
Right.
It's actually a...
It's not the Orioles of last year, Kansas City, or those woebegone Astros teams that lost 115. They were horrible.
And I really like what they've done, obviously, to completely change their farm system. I like that they're building for the future. I wanted the teardown. I kind of want them now to do one of two things. Either get worse, just admit that this lineup's too good and start trading some of the guys from it. Trade Ryan Healy, trade some of these other guys that are helping make your lineup a little bit too good right now, or add to it with just a little bit. The Mariners could do just a little bit right now.
Just to be okay.
Teal lining.
Stop it. Sign Brett Anderson, lefty pitcher. Sign Jake Diekman, reliever, and sign Sergio Romo, who's out there, to close. Just sign those three guys.
And then you're in the playoffs.
No.
Good. Well, what's the point?
I didn't say you'd be in the playoffs.
No, then you win 77 games, right. And then now you have like
the 14th pick in the draft.
14th pick.
I know. Good. See, I don't want, that's why I think
can
I
just keep going.
Rather do work. No, but you know, in the meantime, stop it, Howdy. In the meantime, you have found a way to completely revamp your farm system. In the meantime, hopefully some of those names I just mentioned perform well enough that you can deal them at the deadline as well. And if Jake Diekman has a bounce back year, that's exactly the kind of player somebody wants at the deadline.
23-10
Stop
right
it.
Now in the season.
Stop it.
That's not right.
How dare you?
17-10, excuse me, through
2013. Don't. That is old news, and there is no reason to keep playing that.
Yeah, you're right. 20-13 record was a long time ago.
It was 2 years ago. All I'm saying is, as I'm sitting at home last night.
This goes back to your adolescence.
Yes. My buddy Brian and I, every year, we'd sit around together and just talk about how the season was going to go and how this was clearly going to be the year. And there was no way that the team could be stopped. Mets fans do the same thing. If you know any Mets fans, we've talked about them. Yep. My buddy Dave is the worst at this. I've told this story before, but every year. I see Dave, and he's just like, Mets are going to be great. Like, no, they're not, Dave. Yes, they are. Santana's going to win 30. John Main probably wins 22 to 24 games, the main man. And I got this kid from Japan. I see him as probably an 18, 19 game. Like, he'll start going through it. And he's like, they can't be stopped. Definitely a World Series team. Probably going to win 120 games.
Our goal here was to take a step back in 2019.
Right. Just a little step back, right? And then, Dave, you talk to him in July and August. He's like, me and my dad, we're going to Shea. We've made these signs, and we're going to boo every player on the team like it's our job. Like, he's so excited to go hate his team. And so, yes, it goes back to my childhood. Every year you have a conversation about how your team's going to be good.
So that we can start moving forward in 20 and 21.
Exactly. Exactly. Wade LeBlanc agrees with me, by the way, Brock.
I think if you ask any person, any player in that clubhouse, there's not a player in there that's going to feel like we're taking a step back. We all feel like we have a good team. We all feel like we can compete. Do some things have to go right for us to be able to compete? Yes, but that goes for every team. That goes for all 30 teams out there. So we know that we have talent in that clubhouse. We have some young guys. We have some veterans that can help them grow through the process. And you never know what can happen when you have young guys.
Graz is the established old man in this build. In sports radio here, he's the established icon that's done it the longest of anybody on it.
You think Graz would be okay with me getting excited?
No, not at all.
He probably wouldn't.
But the Graz has asked this question a number of times, just about anybody they've had on the Bob Graz and Tom show, and that is, you think this fan base is prepared for this season? They have never, in the last 20-some years, ever had somebody, we played the clip there, like right. Jerry DePoto, say,
admit this.
Yeah, admit that this is going to be a step-back year. How is this fan base going to handle it?
I don't know. I mean, I think this fan base is so used to frustration that I think they actually handle this well and just say, look, at least they're not telling me they're going to win the World Series
Correct.
This year.
It's
at
way
least,
better than the opposite, it, right?
It's better,
way better
than
the expectations being super high
exactly.
and falling short.
And look, and I think they could exceed the incredibly low expectations. So maybe that's all I'm saying. Look, I understand. I'm not being ridiculous.
75, as this roster has said, as most of the computers have spit out, is not incredibly low.
No. In fact, that's what I was saying. In some ways, I'd almost like them to be worse and guarantee yourself a pick somewhere in the top five, or be just a little bit better and make this year fun and trade some of those guys mid-season and see what you can get back. Because if Encarnacion has a good year, you can deal him at the deadline for sure.
Well, what is right now as we sit here the single most important thing about this season to you? Like when it ends here, it, you know, a long ways from now. But when it ends, what is the single
continuing
most
to stockpile
important thing?
Young talent.
All right.
It's continuing to stockpile as much young talent as you can possibly find and continuing to change the culture of what it means to be a Seattle Mariner. That's what they can accomplish this year. But you know what? As a fan, as a guy who just likes watching baseball, I'm not going to root against them every night, even if I know they should
like,
be losing games.
Be a dreamer,
games.
Bro. Be a dreamer.
I'm not going to do that. I'm going to watch this team. I'm going to have fun doing it. Kyle. I will hashtag
Great.
Fight with Kyle.
There's nothing.
Awesome.
There's
I'm going to have fun
very
with
very good.
This is where you and Lydia could be like on the same page more
be.
Than ever before.
We
You're going to learn how to be a fan like Lydia.
Lydia and I are going to be.
You can already see the dread in your eyes.
Simpatico.
You're just like, oh, gosh,
this is
going to
be great for
no.
you, Mike.
Lydia, I will learn to be a little bit of a fan like you this year if in return you learn to be a little bit of a fan like me.
Now veto.
Veto?
I'm not booing anybody.
I said I will come to your side and learn to be a fan a little bit like you if you learn a little bit of what it's like
okay,
to be a fan like me.
A little bit, sure. I could do that.
No, you already vetoed.
I'll try and compromise.
Nope, you already vetoed. I don't know whether I'm
booing.
The offer's off the table. It's too late. I'm not going to teach you. I'm not going to take you under my wing and show you the joy of being me. All right. This hour, Brock and Salk, as we mentioned, brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. We do have a big question for you guys coming up at 9 o'clock, and I'm curious to see some more of these answers. We'll do it right after Good News, Bad News, No News next on Brock and Salk.
Good. Good news.
Yeah!
Bad news. No news. Now, here's Brock and Salk.
I have an ally, Brock. I have an ally. Jessamyn McIntyre's on my side.
Oh, yeah?
She said, against my better judgment, I'm going to admit it, I agree with Salk. She's looking forward to the baseball season.
You mean another ally?
Huh?
In addition to me,
and
another
you,
ally.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. Another ally. But I knew you were going to be on.
Okay.
Honestly, Lydia, that's like your... That's your ground.
Mm-hmm.
You've already staked out.
Really,
that Salk's territory.
Just coming to your fiefdom.
Right. Just like really I was the is. Expert on any type of anxiety. If you guys have questions about that, baseball excitement also up next.
There you go. Baseball excitement and anxiety with Lydia Cruz.
Resident expert.
Right now it's in the news.
Good news, bad news, no news.
The Lions hired Daryl Bevel as their new offensive coordinator.
I think that's good news for Daryl. What I know about coaches, and I was just chatting with my little brother about this last night, they want to coach. That's what they're wired to do. That's what they've done their entire life. And for Daryl, you know, to be out of football last year, I do believe that if Josh McDaniels gotten the job and accepted the job in Indy, Daryl Bevel would have been the coordinator and would have had Andrew Luck to work with and probably would have had a fine year. So to be back in the fold, I think with a decent fit and that he has a quarterback and a good offensive line, and he's going to be asked to run the ball, asked to do things, you know, creatively and explosive plays and run the football, things that he is, well, a pretty good resume for. Good news.
Yeah, I'm going to say no news. It's Detroit. What happens there essentially happens in a vacuum. It's a bad organization every single year, and they haven't shown anything to prove that that is going to change. I think Daryl Bevel, and I'll say this again, is a really good designer of offense. I do. I think he's a good play designer. I think he's creative, and I think he does a great job of figuring out how to utilize the talent around him and get the most out of him. I don't think he's a good play caller, and I don't think Matt Stafford's a very good quarterback, so all of that probably balances out to no news.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Bob Costas has left NBC Sports after 40 years.
I think it's terrible news. I'm really bummed out about this. I don't know how you guys feel about Bob Costas. I know he can be polarizing, and I know he turned some people off with some of his comments that he had when he was giving those commentaries on NBC during football games. I love Bob Costas. He is one of my very favorite broadcasters in the business. It's crazy. He never blinks. I don't understand how he does it. He just sits there. He just doesn't blink.
He had his lid stapled internally.
You think that's what it was? Like when he was 20 years old? But like he never says or ah or looks for words. He is as smooth as anybody. I'm just always so incredibly impressed by what Bob Costas can do. And yeah, I wondered a little bit, you know, when you see news like this, why exactly is that happening, right? I mean, you hope certainly that it's not some sort of a scandal behind the scenes. That seems to be the norm these days. There's no indication that anything like that has been the case here, but it sounds like he wanted to do more and that the NBC just doesn't have enough for him. He doesn't seem to really like the NFL. He's backed away from that and been critical of it. The Olympics is only every couple of years, and he started to walk away from that. They don't have baseball, which is his true love. They don't have basketball anymore. He was awesome doing basketball halftime. Mm-hmm. So I would imagine we'll see more from Bob Costas, maybe in a commentary role. But yeah, I think it's a huge bummer that he's stepping aside.
I'm going to say no news. Hadn't hardly noticed the last 2 years. And I'm going to say he got replaced by someone better than him.
Who?
Mike Tirico. I think Mike Tirico handles that role.
Mike Tirico in that role. I want Mike Tirico doing play-by-play, which is what he's great at.
I think Mike Tirico can be thrown into any role anytime, and the people around him love to work with him. I don't know if the same can be said. Bob Costas in his prime was phenomenal. This is not a slight on him at all. He's a franchise quarterback. He just got replaced by, like, a Tom Brady.
Remember when he went Tirico's to Russia better. And had pink eye? That was crazy.
I think that's why this all went down.
You think it's all stemming from
that? They looked
at
his eyes, just like they look at Mike Zimmer's eyes, and they're like, you can't do this anymore.
Aw, poor guy.
Good news, bad news, no news.
He tried to really battle through that, by the way.
Yeah, don't do that.
He was a warrior.
All right.
Michael Kendricks, his court date, sentencing date for his insider trading charge was pushed back from late January to early April.
That's bad news if I'm Michael Kendricks and put myself in his shoes. You want clarity. This has been hanging over you for years. You've done what you can to try to resolve it, to appeal the matter NFL-wise, and you came back and played phenomenal ball. It's bad news. You don't know what free agency would have meant to you. You don't know where you're going to be long term. It may be actually good news for the Seahawks because it may limit the opportunities that others have, that they're just not going to pursue that with that unknown factor. But all in all, I would say for me, that news came down yesterday and that was bad news.
Yeah, I'm going to say it's definitely good. No, not definitely. I think it's good news. And I, you know, unfortunately, this isn't about what's good for Michael Kendricks. It's what's good for the Seahawks. I think that this is going to scare teams off from signing him because they're not going to have clarity and the Seahawks are going to be able to get him on a decent deal, which I think they want. I also think it means he's not going to jail. I don't think there's any chance.
Why
he does.
Why do you say that?
Well, I'm going to guess that this is because he is cooperating with the investigators, and that means that he has some information for them, and that's going to lead to them being even more favorable to him. I don't think that people...
Chat with Lester Munson about this?
I haven't yet spoken with Lester.
Check with Roger Kosick on that?
I haven't checked with Roger either, nor Mike McCann, or the whole legal gang out there of analysts, but That's my impression of this. And again, it's insider trading. It's not embezzlement. It's not a pyramid scheme. It's not money laundering. It's a different crime. And while I understand that Martha Stewart went to jail, she went to jail for lying to the investigators. And my understanding is that this is the opposite, that he's been incredibly helpful. And if this is because he's giving them more names and cooperating, well, that probably increases the chances that he never sees jail time. So I think it's going to end up being good news for the Seahawks and long-term for him as well.
And a little bit more news. Russell and Sierra formally announced today as charter investors in bringing the Major League Baseball back to Portland.
Is that good news? What kind of news is that?
That defines Russell news.
It's Russell Wilson
Russell
news.
Russell Wilson news.
That is Russell.
Well, that leads us perfectly into the conversation about Russell Wilson, because trying to determine who he is and what his brand is in a world where he's got his own logo on his own football field at his own house, for some reason, that's now a question, and it's next. I'm Brock and Salk.